Hello, friends, and welcome to this episode of Reimagining Justice, Texas Impact's special 10-part series on health equity. This series is part of our ongoing podcast, Weekly Witness, which equips Texans of all faiths for leadership and policy advocacy and civic engagement. I'm your host and Texas Impact's Outreach Director, Scott Atnip. You can find more information about today's episode, including blog posts and other resources on our website at texasimpact.org/weeklywitness. If you've heard the expression, your lifespan should be a function of your genetic code, not your zip code, you've been introduced to the idea of health equity. In the past 10 years, media attention has focused increasingly on the reality that health status, longevity, and other indicators of physical and emotional well-being are functions of a complex set of factors, including race, income, intergenerational wealth, educational status, and more. It turns out that having health insurance and access to healthcare are just one important piece of the puzzle. And health equity should be a primary concern for faith communities because local congregations interact with vulnerable people through a variety of outreach activities, so we're well positioned to understand the connections between the many inputs that impact health. Things like access to healthy food, the availability of safe, affordable housing, and even proximity to sources of pollution. Those are all things we call social determinants of health, the things that drive health status, and we're going to be talking more about that today. We hope that this podcast series inspires you to learn more about health equity and the social determinants of health in your local community so you can be an effective advocate for a healthy future for all Texans. And so we're going to be talking more today about social determinants of health, and we're going to be doing that with our guest today, who I'm honored to have with us. Annalise Cawthorn is the Director of Operations at the American Institute of Dental Public Health, and importantly for today's conversation, a Texas Impact board member, so I'm going to be especially nice to her today. She's also one of the leading experts in the state working on the forefront of social determinants and understanding health equity. So Annalise, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Scott. I feel like I don't even need to speak today because that intro was just so wonderful and comprehensive in informing us about health equity.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for that. If I was the only one that talked today, I feel like folks would tune out pretty quickly, and I know they're excited to hear from you. So thanks for being on. Before we jump into social determinants, you have an interesting academic and professional background in both research and data, largely focused in health and the oral health fields. So I wonder if you could start out by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself, and I'm particularly interested in why you chose this focus.
Sure. I get this question a lot because my degree is actually in psychology. So I have a bachelor's in psychology and my master's is in experimental psychology. And so I sort of fell into the oral health field because I have a background in health psychology and worked as a graduate research assistant at the Mississippi Tobacco Data Work Group. So I was sort of one of the founding members there because grant funding came in for us to understand and attempt to address smoking behaviors throughout the state of Mississippi. So a big piece of what I did throughout my early career was surveillance data. So I was there. Back in the day, we had Scantrons. So if you know the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System Survey and also the Youth Tobacco Survey, we were the distributors and disseminators of that in the state of Mississippi. And afterward, we would evaluate that data. And so I would, you know, I was there scanning the Scantrons, sending out the Scantrons and thinking, oh my gosh, this is awful. Mm-hmm. But now as an adult and sort of being in this field for over a decade, I realized how important that was, and I'm lucky to have gotten that experience. So I fell into oral health by applying for a job at UT Health San Antonio School of Dentistry, and I got the job. And because of my public health background, married with my expertise in biostatistics, I started working at a school-based dental sealant program called Miles of Smiles.
Okay.
And at the time, it was a partnership program between San Antonio and Laredo. And essentially what we did is provided a free preventive dental care in the form of sealants and fluoride varnish applications to children in underserved areas. So it was definitely really rewarding work, and it helped orient me to the fact that oral health is often overlooked in public health generally, mm-hmm. and that access to oral health is actually a huge issue that a lot of people throughout the U.S. don't know, and even in public health, there's a lack of education around it. And so that sort of drove to where I am today through starting the American Institute of Dental Public Health to advance the science and education of dental public health, including students and public health professionals who are interested in helping address oral health inequity.
All right. So you know that we're doing this podcast series on health equity and the social determinants of health. And this idea of social determinants impacting health outcomes has entered the mainstream of public dialogue in the last decade. And many of us are just becoming aware of this idea or just thinking about this idea behind social determinants. And it certainly makes sense intuitively, but maybe you can help us understand a little more about what it means. What are social determinants and how do they impact our health?
Yeah, that's a great question because you're right. I would say a lot of people haven't really understood the focus, although we in the public health sector have been looking at social determinants for the past 20 or 30 years and really understanding that it's not just about whether or not you have insurance, right? So that's kind of how we used to think about whether or not somebody could access healthcare was like, do you have insurance? And if you do, you're good to go. And we start to realize that accessing healthcare is very complex. And it's based on a lot of different factors. So that includes whether or not you have transportation to your healthcare. That includes whether or not you have health literacy. Can you actually understand what your healthcare provider is telling you to do? You know, and it's a really, like you touched on in the very beginning, it's actually a very complex set of factors that public health advocates, evaluators, practitioners are all trying to understand. Because what happens with social determinants is that if they aren't addressed, what ultimately happens is a disparity, which just means a negative difference. So some groups have advantages and others don't. And so our social determinants can often impact how that disparity is manifested. So for instance, we talk a lot about social determinants and how they drive equity. And I thought I might back up just a little bit and talk about the difference between equity and equality. That means that equality is like everybody gets the same thing. And equity is actually saying people are getting the things they need to be successful. So a really easy way to think about this is insurance. So if I gave everybody in the United States insurance, then I would be treating all of them equally, right? So problem solved, but not really. Because insurance is just one piece of whether or not we can address a disparity. So I may have insurance. So I may have health insurance through my employer. But if I'm an hourly worker, can I take time off? Can I afford to take time off to go see the doctor? Do I have reliable transportation to see the doctor? Can I afford the copay? If I have children, do I have childcare while I go see the doctor? So it's really not about giving everybody the same thing. It's about giving people the tools to success that they need to overcome some of these disadvantages that vulnerable populations in particular experience.
And even then, even if everybody has the exact same health insurance and access to going to the doctor, their outcomes might still be different because of other factors, right?
Absolutely. A lot of that has to do with whether or not you have the ability and capacity to carry out your treatment plan. So I may make it to the doctor and the doctor can tell me, well, here's all of this medication. And I can say, well, I can actually only afford about half of that. So, or here's your treatment plan. And I come home and read it and say, I have no idea what this is saying to me because it's filled with all of these big words and I don't understand them. And maybe I feel embarrassed to go back to the doctor and say, I don't know what you're telling me. So there are all of these very complex pieces that include health literacy and numeracy, that include whether or not you have financial resources, and whether or not even your community, like your cultural factors. We talk a lot about, in terms of health equity, how our culture influences how we approach the healthcare system. And we know that disenfranchised communities, primarily communities of color, don't trust the healthcare system because they have been perpetually oppressed by systems that keep the healthcare system from treating them equitably. And so even when you can overcome that, you might even come across people who just don't trust the healthcare system, don't want to access it. And then we're perpetuating disparities because of these systems of oppression that have been targeting vulnerable communities for decades and decades and hundreds of years.
So is it safe to say there's kind of an infinite number of different social determinants that could impact health outcomes, or Is there a list somewhere?
There is. There is. But, you know, if you want to understand sort of the primary ways that social determinants are measured, at least here in the United States and globally, the CDC puts out a, well, I guess it's every decade. So we're on Healthy People 2020, and soon we'll be coming out with Healthy People 2030. And so the Centers for Disease Control actually measures and evaluates particular social determinants of health, although this is an ever-evolving process of understanding the social determinants of health. But the CDC has a really good list of, ways that they evaluate and are able to quantify some of these social determinants of health. And so that's a great place to start, as is the World Health Organization, if you're interested in looking at social determinants globally.
All right. So intuitively, we understand that all of those different things are connected. Is there a benefit to people understanding and thinking about health in terms of social determinants?
I think so. I think the biggest way, particularly members of the faith community, how we tend to understand and experience social determinants are usually in ways that we don't understand how we're participating in the process. So for instance, you may have a ministry in your church that provides support for older adults. So you get them to their appointments, or you take them to the grocery store, or you go to their house and you fix up things that that maybe they can't get around to. And faith communities in that way are actually acting as a safety net, because the social determinants are impacting them being able to access things equitably. So I think as it relates to faith communities, we often have this opportunity and probably not even understanding how we are coming in and sort of addressing those social determinants and how we just carry out our daily work.
So do you have any advice for faith communities who are thinking about getting involved in this work, how they can either learn more? I guess listening to this podcast would be one, but what congregations should do?
A lot of congregations are already doing the right thing. So a lot of faith communities, how we operate, and I'm a Unitarian Universalist, and so that's sort of my place on the board of Texas Impact. And what I found is what underscores a lot of faith communities is love and service to other people. And so instinctually, we as members of faith communities look for ways to support each other and to support our greater communities. And so faith communities have a long-standing tradition of addressing health inequities and other inequities too, and probably just not even realizing it. So I think that's like the number one way that faith communities can understand is, one, keep doing what you're doing; two, educate yourselves. But three, I think the biggest place that faith communities have an opportunity to understand and address inequity is through opportunities like working with Texas Impact. When Texas Impact says, go and talk to your legislators, go and talk to your decision makers, and help them understand why this is important to you so that you can have that direct influence on the policies surrounding inequity.
All right. There's a good board member right there giving the shout out. Why don't we take a break real quick so we can say thank you to our sponsors.
You're listening to Reimagining Justice, Texas Impact's special podcast series on health equity. Texas Impact is Texas's oldest and largest interfaith advocacy network. We work for freedom, justice, and opportunity for all people. We advance public policies that are consistent with broadly held religious social teachings by mobilizing people of faith to talk to policymakers and to other members of their communities. To find out more and get involved, go to our website, www.texasimpact.org. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Reimagining Justice is made possible by the generous support of Methodist Healthcare Ministries of South Texas, serving humanity to honor God by improving the physical, mental, and spiritual health of those least served in the Rio, Texas Conference of the United Methodist Church. Methodist Healthcare Ministries is a private, faith-based, not-for-profit organization dedicated to creating access to healthcare for the uninsured in South Texas through direct services, community partnerships, and strategic grant-making. Reimagining Justice is also supported by the DentaQuest Partnership for Oral Health Advancement, revolutionizing oral health to create an effective and equitable system that results in improved oral health and well-being for everyone. The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of Texas Impact and do not necessarily reflect the views of our sponsors. If you appreciate this podcast, We hope you will consider financially supporting Texas Impact with a monthly contribution. You can donate securely and easily on our website, texasimpact.org. And now, back to our program.
All right, friends, welcome back. And Annalise, thanks for staying with us during that very long break. I wonder what type of social determinants you feel like we still especially need to address.
So I would say here in Texas, some of our social determinants of health that we are still struggling with, number one, we don't even have the basic foundational needs. So Texas has the highest percentage of our population and the highest number of people of any state in the United States that lack basic health insurance coverage. So we're really not even starting at square one in terms of equity and just getting people basic healthcare coverage. And that translates into people only accessing emergency room services for high costs for both taxpayers and individuals. And so here in Texas, we're really struggling with just the basic needs to start addressing health inequity. And I would also say that here in Texas, as it relates to oral health and just health in general, we have a lot of unique barriers to accessing care. And so for anybody who might be listening outside of Texas, but people in Texas definitely know what I'm talking about, we have not only just rural areas, but we actually have frontier areas, meaning that it might be in your county that you don't have a physician, you don't have a dentist, you don't have a healthcare provider. And it may also mean that in your county and the surrounding counties, you don't have one. So just the basics of accessing care. I know whenever I was working an evaluation and looking at health statistics throughout Texas and the Texas workforce in general, in particular the oral health workforce, but this actually applies to mental health, to the medical workforce. And I want to say the magic number is like 45 counties in Texas don't have a dentist. And when you look at the number of counties that only have one dentist, I think that doubles. And when you're talking about being able to just drive like less than an hour to go see a provider, there are many Texans that don't even have that. And so it's not here in Texas, I feel like our struggles are actually profound because we just lack the basic essentials of starting to address health inequity by saying we need more people we need more providers to see patients, and we need more patients to be covered by insurance. So it's a very complex issue. But here in Texas, I think that's the place to start.
That's interesting because as somebody who lives in East Texas, I wouldn't have thought of the urban versus rural divide being one of the social determinants, but that absolutely seems right based on my experience. Are there any other populations in Texas that you feel throughout the world, that you feel like need a little extra special emphasis in terms of social determinants?
Yes. It's interesting that you ask that question because I like to think of this as we are all sort of onions, right? Hmm. We all have these layers and identities, and each one of those layers or identities has the opportunity to present a particular health disparity. So I am a cisgender, straight, white woman living in an urban area. So my level of access and advantage and privilege is very high. I don't have those kinds of inequities and struggles versus communities of color, versus LGBTQ people, and versus people living in rural areas. You know, each layer has the potential to add a complexity that then may lead to a health disparity. I know within my congregation, we have many trans and non-binary individuals. And so just hearing those people struggle of, yes, I have health insurance, but I can't actually get a provider to accept me. I can't actually get a provider to see me. Or yes, I have, you know, access to a school, but a school won't let me use the bathroom and the gender expression that I need to use. So these levels of complexity are often things that I, as a woman of privilege, don't have to think about, but they are experienced profoundly here in Texas and really all over the world. I mean, if we're really talking about in terms of global health, I know there's been legislation nationally as it relates to the LGBTQ community and bathroom bills and all of those things, even if they don't actually go through, they actually lead to a level of trauma experienced by individuals in that community. I was doing a podcast for my own organization, Anecdotal Evidence, and so I was talking to Alex Karoglian, who is from the Fenway Health Institute. And as I was preparing for that podcast, I kind of looked at the LGBTQ community and how they access oral health care, because that was what I was in particularly interested in. And so I found that trans individuals, 70% of them actually don't even feel comfortable going to the dentist because they fear discrimination. So it's even about like getting people to access care. And I talked about that too, just kind of the cultural aspects that prevent us from even accessing care to begin with and how that drives health disparities. So it's not only an education issue, but we as providers and public health advocates need to do the work to be accepting and tolerant, because we can't even begin to address health disparities if people don't feel comfortable coming to us.
Yeah, I think that's important, and reminds me of another question that we should probably talk about. When we think about social determinants, we think about an individual living in a rural area or an individual person of color, but this is about more than just looking at public policy or whatever the case may be at an individual level, but it's really looking at structural change, right?
Absolutely. And I think that's probably one of the main things that we need to keep in mind as we're addressing disparity and inequity. And when I use words like privilege, that, I have racial privilege because I'm white. And so I'm not actually, this isn't fighting things on an individual level. This is fighting entire systems that tend to oppress communities. And that is a really difficult concept to understand because it's kind of big and it's difficult to conceptualize. But it's really common, and it's built on oppression that has been here in our country for decades and hundreds of years. It's things like gerrymandering and the inability for people to be able to vote. So that way you can elect officials that actually represent you. And then that goes into how they make decisions for the healthcare system. And so it's really tiny things that we see that lead to really big structural and systemic issues that then perpetuate oppression. And so the main way that you can combat those structural systems of oppression is to do your homework and put people, leaders, elected officials into office that can understand and address these structural systems of oppression, to include our healthcare system.
I think that's helpful. And we've been talking a lot in recent weeks about the fact that the next year really will be an opportunity for people to engage their legislators, engage candidates for office on the issues that they think are important. How would you structure a question or a conversation with an elected official or a candidate specifically on this topic?
The first thing that whenever I lobby, like with when I went to Texas Impact and I lobbied on Interfaith Advocacy Day, which is just really, really wonderful. And you don't have to be a member of Texas Impact to participate in that. So just let me give a quick shout out for anybody who's interested in participating in Interfaith Advocacy Day. But my first question to elected officials was, Texas is the last state, 50th out of 50, in terms of accessing healthcare. What are you looking to do to fix that? Because like I said, we don't even have the basic foundation here in Texas to begin to like address inequity. And those inequities often fall on members of faith communities. So when the person next to me sitting in the pew doesn't have the ability, they're uninsured, they don't have the ability to get healthcare, it's often churches and charitable organizations that provide support for indigent care. And so when I'm sitting here looking at the person in the pew next to me that can't access the healthcare system, that's what I come to officials with, is saying like, my community needs help. I am seeing every day that my community needs help. What are you going to do to help them?
Yeah, and I think it's important to tell those stories of the people in your congregation, or there are people listening today whose county doesn't have a dental provider, an example you use. So we need to be telling those members of the legislature those stories and ask them how they plan on fixing it and how we can help with that. A lot of kind of big issues we've talked about today. I wonder what gives you hope.
What gives me hope? And again, this is something that I've learned through my work with Texas Impact, is that there's so much more that we have in common versus the elements that may divide us. And I think today, in today's political landscape, where people are really looking for opportunities to potentially divide communities, I think what gives me hope is there are so many more people who are looking for ways to unite. And that what underscores, again, most of our faith traditions is love and service to other people. And so by those driving forces of love and service, we are able to understand problems and address problems really from a multifaceted perspective. And this really doesn't have anything to do with politics. It doesn't matter where you are on the political spectrum. I have found that most people are good and kind and right. want to see others helped. And so approaching it from that goodness and kindness and a place of unity is really special and important. And that's really what gives me hope.
Right. Anything else you feel like we really need to talk about in terms of social determinants today?
I would just give people some resources. I would invite people, I know this is nerdy, but if you really are interested in learning more about the social determinants, a good way to start is just Googling social determinants, Googling health equity, because there's a lot of people who are doing a lot of innovative work in this area. Kaiser Family Foundation, there are a lot of like Race Forward. There are a lot of really good ways to understand it. And it starts just like through simple Google searches. So if you are interested in learning more, the good thing is that there are many resources out there to help educate you.
Yeah, and I hope you'll check out the blog post that will accompany this podcast. You can find that at texasimpact.org/weeklywitness. Annalise, thanks for being with us. Any shameless plugs you'd like to leave? I know you've given Texas Impact several, but any of your work you'd like to give a shout out to?
I would, actually. So for the American Institute of Dental Public Health, although we are a national organization, we hold our annual conference in Texas every year in San Antonio. And this year, we are focusing on oral health inequity. Our registration is really low. It's a two-day conference, and it's $150 to attend. And so if you are interested in learning more about oral health equity, we purposefully design our colloquium to be very interactive. We have a lot of workshops and a lot of discussion sessions, and we choose who we think are very innovative speakers. So anybody who's interested and you're local or not even, or maybe not local, and you'd like to learn more specifically about oral health inequity, we'd invite you to register when we open registration in September.
All right. Where would we find that registration?
You can find it through our website at www.aidph.org.
All right. Well, Annalise, thank you so much for your time. More importantly, thank you for the work you're doing each and every day to further the causes of oral health, of health equity. You are an amazing advocate, and we certainly appreciate the time and your continued work.
Thank you,
Scott. And thanks to all of you for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the conversation today as much as I did. We will be releasing more content soon. So until then, I hope you'll go ahead and rate and review the podcast and share this content with your friends and congregations. And if you've made it this far in the program, you certainly appreciate the content. So we hope that you'll go ahead and make sure that you're supporting Texas Impact by becoming a member, either at the individual or congregational level, by going to texasimpact.org/join. Thanks a lot, friends. We'll look forward to bringing you more content next week. Until then, let's get to work.
Reimagining Justice is a production of Texas Impact and the Texas Interfaith Center for Public Policy, engineered by David Vassallo, executive producer Bea Moorhead. Our series is recorded in Austin, Texas.